You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 218. I'm Van Burnett, joined as always by Steve Gisuelli. Tonight, we got a fun show talking 2026 biggest surprises. And not quite the midway point, Steve, but we're getting there, and pretty close. And we've got probably about 20 different names, and on top of that, some teams. Just a great moment to pause, reflect, and talk about some guys that, yeah, we might hit on here or there, but then there's some that we haven't talked about at all this season. And a lot of times, just because there's not that much action, you can take with a guy that's top 20 on a player rater in the middle of June. But it's going to be a great show. Every year, we spend so much time in the off season formulating opinions on these guys. There's some confirmation bias for the ones that you kind of draft and hit your wagon to, but it's helpful on a year-over-year basis to assess the broader landscape and just keep tabs on what these guys are doing, what changes are being made, because it's easy to forget that, you know, the book's not fully written for a 26-year-old player that's on the ascent. You know, a lot of these names, as I was going through, it's like, yeah, we've talked about some of these guys for 3-4 years and we feel like we know them. And then you look at what they're doing this year and it's like, man, they're kind of doing what we talked about them possibly doing in 2022. So very excited to get into it. It's going to be back in a little week over week groove, but how's it going out there, man?
Good, good. Enjoying baseball, enjoying the World Cup. I know you're a big, soccer. You're probably a big enough soccer guy that you can be considered a football guy, I would think, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. No, that I could just freestyle into a whole separate podcast. So it's kind of funny seeing the crossover on my fantasy baseball timeline to see the guys out there tweeting hot takes about Erling Haaland and stuff. But yeah, it's fun. I mean, the World Cup is, I went to Brazil in 2014. I don't know if I told you this.
No, I think like you may have mentioned it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never done a World Cup game. My wife actually has in South Africa in 2010. Yeah.
Well, if you guys get a chance to go, just get around, you know, it's a little bit easier in New York than Peoria, let alone Peoria without Chicago or St. Louis having games.
But what's the closest games to you? Kansas City,
KC,
probably, right?
That's the quarterfinal,
right?
Yeah, but I was eyeballing the quarterfinal they're hosting, which is like a Thursday, and I was like, man, if those tickets could even be in like triple digits, maybe I can just splurge and go take it in. Found out that the way the odds are possibly like shaken out, that might be Messi versus Ronaldo, and the cheapest ticket is like $4,000. And
I'm so
like,
people are all over that potentially happening already.
So anyway, not our show, but it is fun having it on all the time.
It's that's an event like you gotta have someone. You have to have a connection to, right?
You need an insider, right? Totally.
But it's cool. It is nice having, you know, I know that like hockey just ended, NBA finals just ended, and it's kind of like it's nice that it's. And we don't mind, obviously, we do a weekly fantasy baseball show, but people talk about it being like, you know, sort of the doldrums of summer with only really one sport going on. But, you know, the World Cup makes that nice. And now that it's expanded, there's more games. It's like a nice, like I like when there's night games for baseball and like 1 o'clock soccer game, a 4 o'clock soccer game right into the Absolutely. Right into the nightcap for games. Dude, that's perfect. So
last note on this, because I know we got to get to the show topic, but I laughed so hard on Twitter. Somebody, because Seattle hosted the last U.S. game, and it was like a local time noon kickoff. And they at the Mariners game that night, there was a gentleman who looked like he hit it pretty hard for the U.S. game, and he had like a bucket hat on, and they kept punching in on him in the crowd. I'll have to show you, but the commentators were crying laughing. This guy looked like he just pulled like a 3-day, like wire to wire bender. It was so funny. They were just zooming in.
There has been a good amount of crossover. Like you saw the Marlins game last night, like all the Scotland fans are there, and like there's just random fly balls and the crowd is going nuts. Fenway Park was taken over. Like it's really cool.
I gotta look up the Marlins one.
The Marlins one, they had, you know, zoom in on the fans and you just saw them in the outfield, and then they zoomed in at their feet, and they were just, you know, 50 cans of empty beer, you know, just the Scottish and fans doing work. Yeah.
And for those Scottish fans, they're going to go home thinking that the Marlins are like a viable regular threat. That's one of our surprises.
That's a nice segue into the surprises. Yeah. I like it. It's a good job by you getting us out of there.
I know. Yeah. I swear I could talk all night. So if you stuck with us, tune in, you know, next Wednesday it's the U.S. game, but it is Tuesday night as we're recording this. We should put a disclaimer, just in case some of these stats have changed. Steve, I think the topic itself is pretty self-explanatory, but talking about kind of the most surprising starts and in a way first halves of the year, very large sample at this point in time, but still a question, like we talked about last show, for how much can change on, you know, first half, second half splits. I think that's going to be in the back of our mind as we talk about these guys. Is one, are we buying it? We always try to kind of assess under the hood. And then two, what it kind of means for their outlook next year. And, you know, will people be buying the increase, or do you think there will still be a discount for whatever reason? So anything else, big picture to cover on introducing the topic before we jump into some of the names here?
No, I know you said like we're not quite at the halfway point, but we're only like a week and halfway, weeks of game worth of games away from the second half.
That's right, because the All-Star break's a little bit deeper.
It's a little bit later this year. You know, sometimes the All-Star break's like right at like the 8th. I think it's now pushed to like the 14th, like the second week in July. But yeah, most guys are at like 75 games, so a week or so worth of games, and we're at that halfway point. But I think it kind of this can go in tandem with our show from last week, and a point remains there. It's like we always look at these, we have two sort of speeds, right? It's off-season, whole picture, what did this guy do? We establish our feelings on certain guys. And then in season, it's so streaky. And then, who's hot, who's not? Like, what's going on this hot streak? Who's the best player in the world for the last 5 days?
Yeah, good point.
To sort of pause and be like, okay, let's take a big picture look and who's really been surprising at this point. Because, like we said last week, we're at the point where it's not just, we have big samples. We have close to half a season. So, it's a nice point to take a step back and be like, whoa, this guy's doing what? And we could determine whether we think that'll continue or not going forward.
Well, let's fire away with the first one, which I think we, of the names, we've talked about him a little bit more because Ben Rice was one that you had flagged, Steve, as a bold prediction. I believe you said Ben Rice will finish as the number one first baseman, not just catcher, which at the time was bold indeed. And I've been the beneficiary on the home league, so a topic I love talking about, but maybe we won't spend as much time on him as some others because we talked about him. But point being, like, I know when we look at underlying statistics, it's not a 10 out of 10 exercise. Like, there are times where you get kind of stumped, and then there's other times where you look at a guy like Ben Rice last year and everything just looked like, how could this guy not go off? And then even with the platoon challenges at the start of the season, which he fully broke through and hit his way into facing lefties as well on a regular basis. Now we're looking at Ben Rice, the easy math, on a 44 home run pace with 22, 284 batting average, 976 OPS. I mean, even the plate discipline, I guess the strikeout rate has gone up from last year, but I don't think it really matters. I guess when you look at the whole body of work, like you were saying, you start to look at the counting stats. He's on pace for 100 runs, 100 RBIs. So Ben Rice has just been a monster. And I think you asked the question of, like, how high does he go next year? And I think the first question would be, he hasn't gotten any catcher time, right?
No.
Like, it's Ben Rice. No. So he will not carry the C. So it's just going to be straight first baseman.
Yeah. He's going to be just the first baseman. I think it would be a much easier question if he did have time at catcher. I'm looking to see. I don't think he's played any games this year at catcher.
He has not. No, I just looked that up. Yeah.
Just first and DH. Yeah.
And so in terms of, I buried the lead here, he is the top rated on the player radar, which does factor in position as well, where he's got catcher eligibility, but he's just ahead of James Wood. So I guess the simple question is, do we think Ben Rice is a first rounder with that lineup, with the age, with the skill set, and with what he's shown us this year? It's tough to crack the first round, but it's hard to argue against it.
I think so. I think next week maybe we'll do our show of redrafting the first round. I would have a hard time not putting Rice in it.
Yeah, because you got to think some of those guys that were fringy at the back of the first. I mean, James Wood will definitely.
Yeah.
But Tatis makes way in certain. I mean, let me pull up. Let me put up the ADP here. Okay, so last year, so Kyle Tucker, Julio. I'm looking at the back half of the first round. Ellie De La Cruz, Julio, Kyle Tucker, Gunnar Henderson, Corbin Carroll, and then even at like 15 is Tatis.
What about like Jose Ramirez? You're like, how big of that fall is that going to be?
Right.
You know,
Cal Raleigh at 17. I mean, I think at the least we're talking about him being at the turn.
You know, Junior Caminero was pretty much a first rounder. He was a first rounder in 15 team leagues last year. You know, the whole mock draft where Nick Pollock took Junior Caminero at 6, and it wasn't necessarily a bad pick. It just got a lot of the oohs and ahs. Like, Ben Rice could definitely be that.
Even when you look at first base, I know people are talking about like the depth of that position, but it's kind of lacking true star power the way it has in past years. Like you look at it's Nick.
There's
Kurtz,
a lot of really. There's a lot of second rounders. Well, I mean, Kurtz I think is also a first rounder now at this point, but after that, and there has been for a few years, there's a lot of second rounders, right? Like even with Olson, the down year Vlad is having, the up year Olson's having. Alonzo, there's second to third round players.
Yeah.
So there's an opportunity there for someone to like take the mantle in a sense.
And I think Ben Rice with the team context, age, power, all that good stuff.
The only thing is it's pretty much a zero in stolen bases. He does have two, but you know, I think when the bat is this good, it doesn't really matter.
And with that position, I mean, it's not on here, but, I guess it could. I was going to say with that position, you rarely get speed, but I think it's a valid honorable mention. Surprise that Josh Naylor is on pace to flirt with 30 steals again. Yeah. Dude, he's got 14.
Yeah.
But yeah, in general, you're not really counting on steals out of a first baseman. So, okay, this one, it's time for me to just bury my WAF long anti-CJ Abrams campaign, because I feel like I've always got him as like a guy I'm not really targeting. I know the bias there is around the plate discipline because that's like tailored to my league settings and everything, but we're looking at in every respect a career year for CJ Abrams, where he's currently sitting at a 286 average, 17 homers, 12 steals. Another guy that when you prorate out the counting stats, it's looking like he's going to surge past 100 runs and RBIs, because now the Nats are actually a powerful offense. They're like, you know, you want exposure there, which is crazy to say and get used to. But Abrams is trailing his stolen base pace of past years, but the power surge is worth noting that, you know, where we were pretty regularly saying, oh yeah, he's a 20 homer, 30 steal guy, he's going to hit 250. It looks like a pretty different player all of a sudden, Steve, with the, you know, 35 homer pace that he's on. The batting average is higher. The pull air has just taken steps year over year over year. And now it's among some of the better pull air rates in the league. So, your thoughts? I feel like you've always been more in on Abrams, still just 25 years old. I'm sure you're loving what he's doing, but I would ask the same question. Where do we think Abrams goes when this past year he was 65th off the board?
Not to jump around too much on the rundown, but as far as surprise team goes, not only the Nationals are good offense, they're, you know, by a lot of measures, the best offense. They lead the league in runs. Like, if you're just looking at that, they have 13 more runs than the second place Atlanta, Los Angeles Dodgers.
Lefty crushers.
So,
yeah.
You know, it's what they've done in DC with this offense. And Washington Nationals Park is notoriously hitter friendly in the summer months. It hasn't even gotten too hot just yet. And also with just, I know they talked about it on Rates and Barrels a bunch, the drag on the ball is the lowest that it's been since 2019. So there may be even more offense coming around the league, and that spells good news for the Nationals. But back to Abrams specifically, like, this is kind of what we dreamed on in 2023 when he had that 18 homers, 47 steals in 614 plate appearances. So he's never really gotten back that. It's been in spurts. Like, he had that really strong start in 2024, I think it was, and then, you know, had fell off in the second half, was, you know, seen at the casino in Chicago, like, sent home for the last week and a half of the season. Like, it got pretty bleak at certain points for him, for as exciting as he was. And, you know, it's starting to come to fruition. Like, it's sort of just a theme of what we've been saying these last few weeks, with, like, these guys take time and there's different paths to get to ultimately what type of player is going to be. And, you know, they're like, I don't think you were necessarily wrong in sort of fading him over the last 2 years. Like, the quality contact metrics were pretty bad. The plate discipline was putrid. Like, there wasn't much hope other than the fact that, you know, he had speed, had pull power, and, like, ultimately put together a good fantasy seasons and not so great real life seasons, like, okay real life seasons. Like, he's a 750 OPS guy over the last 2 years and is not a shortstop. Like, he is bad defensively at short. Like, he is going to move to second or, like, a corner or third soon, despite how good he's been with the bat. But that's all changed this year. It's the best quality contact metrics of his career, best barrel rate. The plate discipline is now, like, okay, right? It's a 20% strikeout rate, an 8% walk rate. That's going to help, and maybe he can get to that 30 steal plateau again, even though he just has 12 this year. But those come in bunches, and as he's getting on base more, it's the best OBP of his career too. A 366 OBP is really good for him. Like, this is sort of what we dreamed on with Abrams, and it's finally come to fruition in his age 25 season. And it's kind of just, you know, it's a lesson for, you know, trusting and waiting out on some of these guys that show the skills and have the talent. Like, this reminds me of a guy that's starting to get hot on that team in Dylan Cruz, right? Like, I could see this path coming as he's, like, finally stringing together a few multi-hit games over the last few weeks. It just takes some time for guys. And Abrams, like, you know, he comes up, looks great, looks like he's going to be a potential, like, second rounder for years to come, doesn't meet that. And, you know, years later, when, you know, it's a little different because he still was drafted pretty highly because he did steal bases and hit home runs, like, the things that we care about as fantasy players. But I don't know if people thought they had this ceiling, that Abrams had this ceiling, and it's cool to see it, you know, coming together. And I think he is sort of a guy that's going to sneak into that top four rounds, top three rounds next year with the paces he's having. I will note that he was scratched today with, I think, either side tightness or back tightness. I hope it's nothing too serious, but curious to see what happens there with Abrams.
Yeah. I mean, it thank you for giving me the grace on the calls from the past few years, but there are certain things that I mentioned. The pull air has gotten a lot better, but interesting that he's doing so much more damage this year on the fastball, which, you know, historically he's always been good against the fastball, but this year he's, like, crushing the fastball. Mm-hmm. 360 batting average, 688 slug. And I was trying to look, like, is he swinging less, or, and none of the kind of plate discipline, you know, surface level metrics are different, but
he's chasing more and swinging and missing more. It's crazy. He's not doing any of that better.
So maybe there's a little bit of room for this to just come down. I mean, usually I'll get a little bit more excited if I've seen a guy that's like never been able to hit breaking balls and suddenly they figure that out.
We've seen really not to this extent, but we've seen a strong first half and a fade from Aipens before in 2024. Nothing like the stretch he's been on yet, but he did have really strong first half and then faded it down the stretch. And guys like this, like look at PCA last year, like they're streaky.
Right.
But sometimes those hot streaks last longer than you would expect. So interesting. And note the injury there and see how that plays out.
Point.
But
that's a good point.
You know, what do you think? Let's say he's healthy. What do you think his end of year line looks like?
I mean, I definitely think he gets to 30 homers. I think 25 steals definitely in there, and then I think the average is where, you know, he's got a good base to work with here. So I think it'll still be a high watermark, but maybe 265, 30 homers, 25 steals, 100, and he's going at like back of the second round in Roto. Does that
I think
sound
that's
right?
Fair. Most of the projections have him for 12 homers, 15 steals the rest of the way, hitting like 250, 260. That would put him at, you know, 29 homers, 29 steals, with like a 270 average. I think he's like Zach Neto. He'll be like Zach Neto. It's a very similar profile. You know, Neto maybe hits the ball a little bit harder and strikes out a little bit more. But I think it's a similar type of player, and that's a really good fantasy player.
Yeah. Okay. And next we're talking about Jordan Walker, who it's no surprise that some of these players that are on the surprise list, their teams are as well, but definitely the Cardinals have been a surprise and still a question from like the pitching side, but from the offense side, now it went from kind of a little bit of like a crusty, are we rebuilding? Are we like in this purgatory to no, the rebuild, it's like been a fast forward with Weatherholt, Walker, position players, youth, Burleson, all that. We'll talk about Burleson, but Jordan Walker, similar to Abrams to a lesser extent, but just 24 years old and the name that we felt like we were starting to, lose patience really, and present company included. And now we're looking at 18 homers, 10 steals, and a 290 average, which is just far and away, you know, highs for him. I think it's even beyond what we were hoping for back when it was like Jordan Walker or Jared Kelnick, like when those two were kind of being called up at the same time. And we were like, is this an all-star? Like, this is, you know, looking like, dare I say, like a Yordan Alvarez thing. I think what's been most encouraging with Walker is that it hasn't just been one long hot streak. Like, I think we really like to see that he was good and then he struggled and then he climbed out of it, especially from a mental aspect. Like, for him to struggle with the past 2-3 years in the back of his mind and come out of it is super encouraging. And then, of course, all the batted ball stuff. I mean, he has some of the best bat speed in the majors. So the barrel, the hard hit, everything, launch angle, it's all looking great. And the speed is, you know, legitimate 20, 25 steal type of speed. So super exciting with Jordan Walker. I think there's no reason why a guy that was this highly touted with this big of a breakout wouldn't be in that same type of area, honestly, of kind of like if the helium is rising, I could see mid second round. I wouldn't see anything later than the third round. What do you think?
Yeah, this is a really, really interesting one. And he is 8 on the player radar. That's sort of just a note. And Abrams was 6, so that's where these surprises sort of came from. Just looking at the 12 team Fangraphs player radar over on that site. I know we collectively and you know, we weren't like banging the drum, but we did leave the door open for Jordan Walker props to us in the offseason.
We spent time talking about him, but we just brought in our is this the Driveline thing?
When he went to Driveline, when I think we saw there was maybe some quotes from him about like some changes that he needed to make, which was more on the soft analysis that caught our eye in the offseason. So I will pat ourselves on the back there, because there were, you know, the door was shut by most, as evident by his ADP that was in the 400s, 500s during the dead of winter this year. I think that is good. Like he has, there were some stretches like, oh, the ground balls are back. You know, was this sort of just an April thing? It's like, okay, he's sort of bounced back and doing what good players does in his last 30 days. It's not, scorched earth, 10 home run April Jordan Walker. It's a 784 OPS with 5 homers and 3 steals. That's how, when those are your bad months, that's how you have superstar fantasy seasons. The K percentage is still super high, but he has elite sprint speed. He hits the ball as hard as anybody. Like, I don't know if it's Jordan Alvarez, but it could be James Wood. Like, that's a super similar profile skills. That, Wood had too many ground balls and is too many ground balls, too much swing and miss. Very, very similar to Jordan Walker, has the same sort of quality of contacts, superstar ability in terms of how hard he hits the ball. With that speed, he probably should run high BABIPs. Like, it's Nick Kurtz, it's James Wood, I think Jordan Walker is maybe a notch below, but not too far below. With just how good he's been.
You think he's a second rounder next year?
I feel less confident in saying that than Rice or maybe even Abrams, oddly. That's an interesting toss-up. Walker, Abrams next year? I think I know the way you'd lean.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, we've seen Abrams be, top 6 round production.
Yeah,
on,
I think we
like
have a decent
higher
floor
in a weird way. Yeah.
And shortstop versus outfield,
Better ballpark.
That's for
lineup
sure.
Context probably, but I mean the arrow's pointing up. It's a similar comp, so yeah, I think
Walker's
probably
in like the 3rd, 4th round, unless he has like another insane, another 10 homer month. Then it could be like Jordan Walker. Then it could be like, James Wood territory.
Yeah. I just feel like there's such a, there's going to be a big FOMO factor unless the bottom falls out, because so many people were in on Walker even before he played a single MLB game. And now it's like, all right, it's happening. Speaking of, I think Mizorowski, and this is one that we were definitely hitting throughout the offseason, and we talked about it, Steve. It's like every year, I think if we're going to put Schlittler and Mizorowski in the same category here, these guys are 1 and 2. Jacob Mizorowski being number 1 overall on the player radar, Cam Schlittler number 7. But those are your SP 1 and 2 so far this season. And it is just like death taxes and an SP1 rising from the pick 100 range. And this offseason, it was like there was Nolan McClain, there was Schlittler, there was Mizorowski. And I know we were like licking our chops when the price for Mizorowski was fading to like the 130s by the time draft season rolled around. And we kind of used the Dylan Cease formula, at least when we were talking, I think it was on the Christmas episode, that if all a pitcher needs to do is take a 10-11% walk rate and get it in check, but every other aspect of their game looks like they could be an SP1, we've seen pitchers do that. And I know that it's kind of a dicey game to play, because you can't just wave a magic wand and be like, all right, fix your control. But Mizorowski is completely done exactly that, to where the walk rate has been 6.5% on the year versus last year where it was up at 11%. And then in terms of the production and him throwing 104 miles per hour and making everybody look silly, 93 innings, 138 strikeouts, a 1.45 ERA and a 0.75 whip. He's got the Brewers at the top of the division. He's still 24 years old. It will be interesting to watch the workload shake out, especially with, you know, obvious playoff contention there. He's now sitting at 93. I don't think with playoffs in mind and just 66 innings last year, I know in that episode where we were talking about him, we were saying, yeah, I think if he can get to 150 and everything looks so good, but at some point they have to do something here, right? Or do they really just let him go 180 innings and then have a postseason after that? Like, the guy's arm is going to fall off with his frame and throwing 104 miles per hour. Like, what do you think of? That's the only question that's interesting. Otherwise, I think it's all systems go. Feels like he could be the SP1 off the board next year, just volume and health pending. But thoughts on Mizorowski, and then we got to talk Schlitler too.
Yeah, I mean, he did have 29 innings combined. That's right. Last year.
Across.
So, and yeah, he pitched in the playoffs a bit too. I think he had like that, you know, so he relief probably stint. Got close to like 130, 140, 150, honestly, because he had like that like bulk role in the playoffs where he looked so good. And I know you were sort of, the market sort of faded on Mizorowski after his slow second half last year. Curious as, maybe I'm not as curious about the, volume, but more of like how the production's going to be, because there was that sort of fade off in the second half last year. Maybe there was fatigue, but I don't know. He looks like he's like learned how to pitch on the fly and like become this, like a 6.5% walk rate with what he has after like he was falling out of favor as a prospect and like was like, okay, maybe this guy could be a good reliever because he just can't find the zone. And there was that story that was told last year about him pitching in the futures game in the spring of 25 and not being good, and the Brewers pitching staff saying like, look, you need to fix this, you need to be better as far as like location and being able to throw strikes. And he completely revamped his mechanics and became this stud pitcher and, you know, started the All-Star game, right? So I think there's something there's something about him that, you know, he's a student of the game, and I know that's cliche and like sort of old man baseball-y take, but like he looks like he can do it. He looks like he has it and has the ability to adjust and find out how to get the best out of himself that not everyone has, in a sense, right? Like, you know, it's like the opposite of sort of what Eury Pérez is going through, right? Like, there's times where you look at him and it's like, does this guy know what he's doing out there? Obviously he does, and he has, you know, as much talent as anybody, and I think he will figure it out, and I think he's starting to figure it out. But it's sort of the, you know, watching Mizorowski learn and grow through this inspires confidence, whereas not every other pitcher, and I don't mean to single out Perez or anything like that, but you know, some people are able to adapt and learn and apply these things more quickly, and Mizorowski looks like that, which is why I would have faith in that. Mm-hmm. All that to say, I think my hot take next year is that Jacob Mizorowski is my SP1. I think my even hotter take is that my SP2 would be Cam Schlitler.
Wow. Okay. So you're buying. It, for what it's worth, it looks like manager Pat Murphy did, after one of his recent starts, they did bake in a couple extra rest days. So that might be a way to get him there and just using the depth. But yeah, he had 12 innings in the postseason last year. So yeah, it's a good call.
Yeah, it was close to like 150 then. Yeah, he basically got to 150 then.
So I still think 180 feels like the max, but that'll be enough for him if he keeps it up to be SP1 overall.
Like, as good as Scooble's been, like, I don't necessarily, like, I'm not going to rank someone that had, you know, loose body surgery ahead of these two guys that are younger and, you know, seemingly healthier. You know,
yeah.
Also Scooble going to a new team potentially, like, and Skeens is obviously, I think, you know, a lot could change, but it's not necessarily been a down year, but he hasn't been as good as these two guys.
No, he hasn't.
Maybe it's recency bias on me, but.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's a track record there, but even Scooble was, you know, maybe he didn't have the track record of the previous era of like the Garrett Coles and the, you know, Scooble. It was like 2 years. We're quicker to anoint
as
the
2 years as good as any, as anybody, but yeah, it wasn't as long as like a Verlander or Cole even.
Right. So Schlittler is a good one to talk about though, because it's been less eye-popping, and I say that with all respect, than Mizorowski, but 109 strikeouts over 95 innings, still a 1.71 ERA and a 0.89 whip. I think compared to Mizorowski, though, it feels almost like a more secure option in a sense. Like, I don't know that...
I'd push back on that a little bit. Like, I don't... Like, Schlittler doesn't have... like a breaking pitch, really. It's mostly hard stuff, right?
That's true.
It's,
I mean,
fastball, cutter, sinker, like close to 90% of the time. And he's had quotes, and you know, I respect these. Like, why would I throw in anything else if these guys can't hit this stuff? Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, maybe sometimes we're like creating a problem when there isn't one. But you know, there is something to be said that Schlittler doesn't have like the spin capability that Mizorowski has. I mean, Mizorowski has 60, he throws his fastball 64% of the time, so it's not like it's much else. And then the other 11's cutter. So
I mean, it's ridiculous for Mizorowski. It's ridiculous extension. It touches 104. The factor with Schlittler is I could see him being like the boring ace, like the Zach Wheeler type, where Mizorowski is looking so out of this world part of me gets nervous that Mizorowski kind of reminds me of like the Chris Sale in a way, where it's like, oh, like just watching him in his frame, it's like I'm already kind of nervous about an injury for Mizorowski, gunning 104 with the innings jump and everything. Schlittler's got a little bit better control, but they're both on fantastic teams. I think it's not a bold take to say that both of these will be like two of the top three. I mean, Christopher Sanchez is the one that's like, you know, from last year and this year.
So he's, you mentioned,
he's going to be kind of the quote unquote boring SP1 option to
Yamamoto
with those
too.
Guys.
I mean, not, you know, it's not that hot. Yeah. You know, but there's a lot of consistency there too.
I know. I really wish I could just like forfeit my fifth, sixth round pick and get five picks around pick 100 to 120, because there's going to be more next year. So all right, so those are first handful of guys: Ben Rice, CJ Abrams, Jordan Walker, Mizorowski, Cam Schlittler. We're going to take our first ad break. We got a lot more names to get back to right after this. Okay, so Steve, talking more and talking more hitters, more White Sox, and Munetaka Morikama. Morikami is one that we talked about as like, you know, I think he was on the radar, but we were quick to dismiss that because the hit tool wasn't there. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like around the majors, there wasn't as much demand. I think, was it his contract wasn't that steep?
Yeah, the fact that like
teams
he didn't get signed. And,
right.
You know, quote unquote, settled for the White Sox, and I think there was expected to be more of like a frenzy around him. You know, and I think we didn't pay enough credence to how good he was in NPB. I don't think we really talked about him much in the offseason. I think that's a pretty big miss on our part. Like, and then, you know, people focused on the swing and miss. And it's such a fine line, because I think it's sort of what held Nick Kurtz back as far as, you know, some trepidation and projecting for bounce for regression this year. Same with Wood. The same thing happens with Kyle Schwarber every year. It's like,
right.
He, you know, and you hear quotes about like, you know, I think Nolan Ryan was like talking on like one of the Orioles broadcasts or something, like how about guys celebrate after they strike out three times and hit a home run. Like, well, that's still a really good game because you hit a home run. Like, and if there was runners on base, like you could have won the game. Like, right, you know, like
right. It's a modern era, man.
Yeah. And there's still, even with all this, you know, the way that we break things down, the numbers that we have, there's still this like bias against strikeouts. And I get it. The caps, there's ceilings and there's downsides to it, but that's a reason why a guy that hit, you know, 20 homers and 246 plate appearances went after pick 200 this year and will right. never go that low, like, you know, during his prime. You know, especially guys that walk and know the zone. Like, yeah, they're going to swing and miss, but yeah, they're also going to know the zone and wait for their pitches to hit. And when they get it, they're going to hit it 450 feet.
Yeah, it's a big time Schwarber. Like, it's a big time Schwarber comp.
This is Kyle Schwarber. Yeah,
and he's 26 years old, and Murakami is ranked 67th on the Razzball Player Rater right now. I just don't know. Now that we've seen him pass the test, right? 20 home runs, 938 OPS, the 240 average doesn't completely kill you in this day and age. Huge bonus, like you said, Steve, that 18% walk rate for like points leagues is huge. But I some of these guys who come over, you feel like they're more established. They're kind of like 28, 29 years old. It's like Murakami is 26.
Coming over in his prime.
There's a chance he might get better, you know, after he sees all this for a full year. Yeah. So I think, really interesting. I do buy for all the reasons you laid out that this is kind of a mini Kyle Schwarber, and it took a long track record of Schwarber for us to kind of take him more and more seriously. Mm-hmm. And it took some of those crazy years of like 48 homers or in the 50s. And for Murakami, like, where do we think he lands this year? Do you think he's a 40 home run hitter? Because if he is, I think at first base, he's probably, I mean, White Sox are another organization like the Nats and the Cards that the arrow's pointing up big time to where that's not, death sentence on RBIs and everything. Like, he could post a season this year that I think vaults him into like the fifth, sixth round of redraft leagues next year. But what do you think?
It's
on
hard
that?
Because he's hurt right now, so it depends when he comes back. Most of the projections have him between 14 and 15 homers the rest of the way. The bat has him for 18. All around 230, 220 average, which I think is fair. When you strike out 33% of the time, it's gonna be hard to have batting averages even start with 250. But I mean, he hits the ball hard 59% of the time and barrels the ball 21% of the time. And who knows what he would do if it's still the happy fun ball when he comes back from the IL. Which I think is going to be relatively soon. I think we're probably going to hear about him going on like rehab assignments soon. Mm-hmm. I'm curious because it's like, okay, during this time, would it have been the regression creeping in? It started to, and it's kind of been like Jordan Walker-esque. Like, he's had cold stretches, and then there's been stretches where he's ran, you know, 15-day rolling averages of 20% strikeout rates and looked really good in that regard. So, I think, even with Kyle Schwarber, like, he was a second rounder this year, and that's probably the highest he'll ever get. There's a ceiling on that, on these type of players.
Yeah.
The second half is going to be telling. Either way, I think he'll be a draft day discount, no matter how good he is or how bad he is in the second half.
Yeah. I mean, he seems like, with just the mystery box of him, it's been noisy production, you know, just around the industry. Yeah. But it comes with a lot of things that people kind of scoff at and question. And there's kind of a plate discipline bias. So I think it's valid take, and the fact that he has been out, I think, will be something we look back on and say, okay, what would that homer total have been if we would have gotten 150 from him? So let's move over to his teammate and a guy that we've talked about for years, on the show being Miguel Vargas, who is kind of putting it all together minus batting average. The OBP is still great. The walk rate is great. As we record tonight on Tuesday, he hit another homer. Mm-hmm. So he's now up to 17, 10 steals himself. So if you're looking at just kind of the power speed, you're pretty close to a Jordan Walker, which is crazy to say for Miguel Vargas, just because it seems like there's a major reluctance to kind of call Vargas legit after how much everybody had kind of been built up and let down from the Dodgers era. But great to see he's running. I think that adds some cushion to his fantasy profile if the batting average is last to come. I still don't know that it's a 240 profile. Like, I think when Vargas was coming up, we thought his hit tool and just like overall his plate skills and everything were such a plus that I'm curious your thoughts, Steve, but going way back to the minor leagues, let me pull this up. Yeah, he was across like AAA, a 290 hitter, year before that, a 304 hitter. Like, he was always a pretty solid hit tool with like a 50 grade hit. And now he's hitting 237, and it's like the last thing before you would call him five categories. So thoughts on Miguel Vargas? Are we buying it? Again, a guy who's just 26 years old, even though it feels like we've been talking about him since we started the show 5-6 years ago.
Is Miguel Vargas the WAF mascot?
He might be first team WAF.
Like, I fell in love with Vargas as a Dodger prospect when he hit like a 480-foot homer off of Shane Beaver in spring training as a Dodger, like in 2022 or something like that. I was like, whoa, like this guy, like the Dodgers found another one.
Uh-huh.
And it just took forever. Like, we always loved the plate skills and like tried to pair that with some of the quality of contact and the power metrics that he showed in the minors. And it finally is coming together. Like, the 235 batting average is not real. He has a 268 XBA. He's fast. He hits the ball hard. You know, pulls the ball in the air and has done so like his whole career. Like, there's no reason why he should be batting this low. It reminds me, and it's you know, not nearly this ceiling, but it reminds me a little bit of Ben Rice last year, where it's like, this guy's doing everything right. Why aren't his, you know, numbers, you know, reflecting that? And you know, he does not. He has good quality contact metrics. He does not have what Ben Rice has. Like, you know, doesn't hit the ball as hard, doesn't barrel as much. Although the 14% barrel rate is really, really good. You know, the hard hit rate is just above average at 45%, still good, but it's like 67th percentile, not like 95th. And the bat speed, same sort of thing, 74th percentile. But you know, the what's not to like here, man? I mean,
right.
You know, the only thing really you could say is, you know, his fielding isn't great, but you know, who cares? He plays a little bit, like he plays all over the field, and it's just, you know, a good hitter coming into his own in his age 26 season, and I think will be a good player for the next few years for sure.
Yeah, and like to see that there's a lot that's changed from 2025 to 2026. Like, it feels like you know, that in a way, kind of Jordan Walker-esque, he's finally found what we were excited about from him getting called up and the original stuff, but 6% more first pitch swings, the hard hit rate is up 4%, like pretty major increases on some of the stuff. The barrel rate is up from 9% up to 14%. So for a guy that's just
the batting average was 26. Good just a few weeks ago too. It's just been like a 30 game stretch of you know, 224, but he has five homers and two steals in that stretch. So you know, it's nothing to scoff at, but I do think that there is some upside there just with how he hits.
Yeah, I think it's been quiet because even in April, he was hitting 200. And like, yeah, I remember early on in the season, he was a question of like, is there something here with Miguel Vargas? Mm-hmm. He keeps hitting like once he started warming up. So, yeah, he's a tricky one to figure. Like, do you think that the industry will be bought in? Like, you know, the sliders look good. We know his prospect pedigree. But for some reason, it seems like there's kind of like a cloud over
the Vargas hype train. I don't think there will be a full, like, you know, oh, so gotta get this guy. Unless he somehow like flirts with like 30-30, but he would need to steal a ton of bases the rest of the way.
Yeah. Okay, that's Miguel Vargas, one that I'm pretty confident the industry will overlook and not get too excited about is the surprise of Casey Schmidt this season, which if you guys have been with WAF throughout, hopefully you got some shares because there were a couple weeks in a row that we were hyping him up. And I think, Steve, again, not to take the victory lap, I feel like this is one we were truly early on. Like, I think we were saying, watch what he does over the next few days. Like, I know the stats look terrible, but the underlying stuff looks great. And then that weekend, he had like three homers, and me and you were texting each other. We were like, did you grab Casey Schmidt? And, you know, he's been great to just kind of ride the wave. I know there were all the questions about, like, his defense and the DH, and obviously San Fran is not an exciting place to hit, but we're now looking at 3 months in a row where it's either been him hitting 300 batting average or having like a plus 850 OPS. So you look under the hood, it's not as exciting as a Jordan Walker or even a Miguel Vargas.
Or even Vargas, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, for being a power hitting, you know, 27-year-old, like, bigger frame, sub 20% strikeout rate, I think is encouraging. And overall, the stats with 16 homers, 7 steals, you probably shouldn't overlook that he's got 72nd percentile sprint speed. Like, he's probably not a zero in speed. So if you got projections in front of you, Steve, I'd be curious what they have for him the rest of the way. It feels like a 25-12 type of season. I'd be shocked if the batting average stays at 296, given where he's been at in his career, but he's definitely had some year-over-year changes where, like, the barrel rate looks way better. You know, just overall, it looks like he's entering his prime with, like, getting the most out of the pole air, all of that stuff. So, and unlike, who was it earlier? Abrams, who's doing all his damage on fastballs, he's a prime example where, like, if you look at last year, the year before, the only pitch type he was doing anything on was fastballs. This year, he's been really, really good against breaking balls off speed. So it just seems like he's maturing as a hitter, which I think is a really good sign versus just him going on a tear and seeing fastballs perfectly and getting good swings on him. He's doing damage on every type of pitch. So, yeah, what are your thoughts on Casey Schmidt, big picture, and maybe rest of the season?
Projections kind of buy it. Like, they have him for 11 homers, anywhere from like 247 to 267. I would say median is like 255, or average is like 255 for batting average rest of the way. So it's interesting. I mean, you know, that's because there's a 13% barrel rate backing this up, you know, and a strikeout rate that's below 20. So it is pretty interesting what Casey Schmidt is doing. You know,
so they have real quick. So they projections have his final line looking like 27 homers, 11 steals, and what would probably land at like a 280,
275, 280 average. Yeah, that's what projections would say the rest of the way. It's interesting because the XBA believes him. His XBA is 297. He's hitting 296. You know, X slug is 524. He's slugging 531. So it's the X stats buy it. And I know that's not everything, but it is interesting that it doesn't seem like that's a fluke. Yeah, he does swing and miss a lot, but he doesn't strike it, or he does chase a lot, so he's not going to walk around. It's a 2.4% walk rate, but, you know, when that's a problem when you're also striking out 34% of the time, 30% of the time, but it's only a 19.5% strikeout rate, and he is making contact with a good amount of stuff. That's, you know, that doesn't compute, because, like, if you are swinging at everything, you are making contact with everything, you're going to put balls in play that are outs, right? They're going to be weak contact in there, but you know, he's sort of somehow making it work. So maybe I wouldn't buy the 290 average, even though the X-Stats back it up. I would say it's more 250, but yeah, the power is real. Like he's pulling the ball in the air, and San Francisco is not that bad of a place to hit as a righty, which is what he is. So, you know, it sort of started. It's like, okay, this guy's like playing versus lefties and doing well. And now San Francisco's just like getting him in his lineup every day. Like he's leading off some days, he's batting third. So I think it's, you know, maybe not as much to buy into long term, but more of a ride the wave. And it looks like it should be a good wave the rest of the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. I mean, you know, when you're watching games and it's like good piece at hitting, like when he pulls the ball, it's in the air. Mm-hmm. And when he's going up, I mean, he does have a lot of those like bloop singles. And,
it's a good, you know, it's like the Isaac Paredes thing, like, right? Like, yeah, his spray chart is so interesting. Like all his singles are like in front of the right fielder, and then all of his homers just over the left fielder's head. Like,
right.
That's what his spray chart. And then it's just a bunch of doubles down the third base line. Like it's, you know, if you could drop those little dots in on the Savant hit chart, like that's sort of what he's doing. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, he'll probably be one that people fade, like we said, but, yeah. I think there's more than you shouldn't be so quick to write him off as just like a flash in the pan, mm-hmm. San Francisco Giants. So, okay, we got more to get to. A lot of exciting names, but we're going to take our second ad break. We'll be right back after this. Okay, so Steve, talking about a hit machine here in Otto Lopez, the hits leader at 337 batting average, 847 OPS. Another guy who is just smack in his prime at age 27. And it looks like we're seeing kind of the Luis Arias plus speed with 16 steals, or a better version of like what people were thinking of, like a Chandler Simpson in terms of stat profile. Like he's kind of been the embodiment of this scrappy Marlins offense and team this year, and does not strike out very often. Just month over month has posted a 340 batting average. Like it's not like it's all come at once. Otto Lopez looks like he is the real deal. And I guess at this stage, because I want to go back, Otto Lopez was ADP 213. He's certainly in a class of his own, I would say, from those like hit specialist guys. And the fact that the speed is there makes him really enticing. It's hard to pin down where these guys will go, like in future drafts. But in terms of like the counting stats, he's definitely on pace to eclipse 100 runs. The RBIs is going to be obviously much, much lower. Like he'd be lucky to get to 65, 70. But what do we think of Otto Lopez? I guess, I mean, it's a surprise from where we drafted, but we knew he was a good player. I feel like he had some kind of truthers out there, right, that really liked Otto Lopez, but he's just been on another planet so far this year. Do we buy that a majority of this is for real, even though he's never hit 300? Or what do we make of this breakout?
I think I'm kind of in. I was trying to look at it last year. I think he had a pretty good second half. I was just looking briefly at the numbers. It didn't tie out to what my brain was thinking, and I could very well be wrong, but I think he was usable down the stretch at least. Or maybe that was in 2024. I forget. But, I mean, he did have 15 homers last year, 15 steals, like had that good bat-to-ball skills, didn't strike out much, and is putting it all together, right? Like, this is someone that has that profile that we talk about that's becoming more prevalent, even in the age of wanting for power and wanting, you know, the complaints that the John Smoltz and everyone had that the game is just all, you know, swing and miss and home runs. But there is another profile, and it's this. It's Stephen Kwan. It's Luis Arraez. It's Otto Lopez. And there's a bit more to Otto Lopez too, because right, he doesn't have, that extremely slow bat speed and zero power and zero pop. He does barrel the ball 7% of the time, which is good for someone that has, this much contact ability, and, only strikes out 14.5% of the time. So, I'm pretty much in. Like, I think this is
Nico Horner type of.
Yeah.
Mold?
Yeah. Yeah. I usually am very anti, like, Luis Arraez, because all he's going to do is hit you singles, nothing else. And it's very one dimensional. And it's ironic because the people that complain about, the home run and the one dimensional thing, it's like, oh, they want more Luis Arraez. Well, it's one dimensional just in a worse, less valuable way. So,
right.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, exactly. Right.
This is a little bit different and sort of a sweet spot of having just enough, like, when you see someone that has a 71% hard hit rate with that sort of contact profile, it has potential to be special, and I tend to believe what Otto Lopez is doing.
So projections would have him rounding out at roughly 11 homers, 26 steals, and they do have the average coming all the way down to like a 280, rest of the way, 285.
Yeah.
So season line, he would land at like a 310, 315, whatever, somewhere in there. Trying to just look at for that, like, 10-30 type of mold with super high batting average. What was our boy Bryce Terang at last year? Because Terang, obviously they're not the same player, but okay, so last year he did have a little bit more with the 18 homers, 24. Mm-hmm. But for context, Terang went 48th in drafts last year. So does it feel fair that Otto Lopez might be landing in somewhere of like the 60 to 90?
Yes. Yeah, I think that's fair.
Okay. All right. But yeah, probably some regression. You have to, right? That or you're going to be 350, 400 watch. okay, next is just an out-and-out great baseball player in Dylan Dingler that,
80 grade name, you're talking, too.
Yeah, 80 grade name. He was one that, like, I just remember constantly getting, like, home run alerts, and it's like, Dylan Dingler. And then you see, like, the guy is just kind of this super weapon for the Tigers. They were playing him around the field. He's a great defender, great hit tool, comes with power. And last year was like, I think maybe a better real baseball player than he was a fantasy player. And this year we're actually seeing the fantasy package where he's sitting at 18 homers, 272 batting average, of course, carrying the catcher. And 27 years old. So when we look at Dylan Dingler, he's a guy that has found kind of sneaky playing time. Catchers, sometimes you worry like, okay, for a guy that, might rest two out of every eight or nine games or something, but he's DH 13 times. And, for that Tigers offense, it's been a little disappointing, honestly. That whole team has been a little disappointing this year. He's been kind of solidified as like a staple, and it doesn't seem like it's a fluke. I mean, the 13% barrel rate, great hard hit rate. Again, like power prime, great at pulling. A lot of his power comes from like the pull fly balls. So, not sure what else to add. Obviously it's a surprise, and that's why he's on the show. Dingler felt like he was just like catcher three.
He was a nice catcher too, I think. A nice back end catcher too.
Sure.
In 15 team leagues. I think that
ADP
that was
230.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now where's
so,
he?
So probably
a top
end
rate.
Catcher two. Like maybe if you squint it, it's like, crap, I ended up with Dylan Dingler as my first catcher. But yeah, I mean, everything backs up what he's doing. The Savant page is bright red, 265, 333, 538, 18 homers. I don't know if he homered tonight. He might have, honestly. But yeah, all of that with just a 22% strikeout rate, like, what's there really not to like? And yeah, like you said, with catchers, like, it's easy for teams to bench good hitting catchers when they're not good fielders, or good fielding catchers when they're not good hitters. He's elite defensively as well, so they basically want him behind the plate as much as he can. And the Tigers, he's been their best offensive player this year, so they're going to DH him on his quote unquote off days, and that's sort of how you can have these really, really valuable seasons from Dylan Dingler. Like, where is he going? Like, I know Drake Baldwin started out extremely hot, and you know, there's still, you know, a lot to like with Kyle Raleigh, despite how bad the season's gone. Jay Langelier's also started out amazing. Hunter Goodman, you know, hits a lot of home runs, but is Dylan Dingler the number one catcher next year?
I mean, right now it feels like Langelier's would be the
I think so.
Maybe the only one mm-hmm. above him, but yeah, I mean, he's absolutely a like a top five catcher you're going to have to invest, because I just don't think this is going to fall out. Tonight he went 3-for-4 with a double, RBI, run scored. Like, the way that right now he's hitting second every single day for them, like mm-hmm. and the playing time is just constantly there. So when you put all that stuff together, and the underlying stuff backs it up, let's see where in this year's draft. It's like, where was so Cal Raleigh was the outlier, right, at pick 17. But then
where was Langelier's?
Pick 50 overall.
Yeah, I think that's sort of.
And then Contreras was 53. So it's like, that's probably where Dylan Dingler is just going to be like a fourth, fifth round type of catcher.
I think it'll be like catcher. It'll be like him, Langelier's, Goodman. And Baldwin too, despite him having this tough stretch here. I think they'll be battling out for catcher one, just because Rice is obviously the number one ranked catcher in leagues where he had the eligibility, which is, I think, everywhere. You know, he'll be just first baseman next year, but I think there'll be a case to take him potentially, right? Like, Hunter Goodman, despite the, you know, has the home park, but has more strikeout issues.
He's a great baseball player, honestly. Yeah. Like, all around, every bit of Dylan Dingler's profile is just like, he's great real life, great fantasy, useful to position, plays all the time. Like, I think you have a hard time like fading that pick at the value. And it doesn't seem like the type where the helium will get out of control, because in a way it's like kind of an oatmeal profile, or like a what you see is what you get. Like, I don't think anyone's wondering, is he going to rattle off 45 home runs, or, you know, have 15 steals or anything.
Should get
like
to 30 though.
He's going to be rock solid. Yeah. All right. Another rock solid guy is Alec Burleson, who will be in that first base discussion with Ben Rice. Of course, Rice higher than Burleson, but Burleson himself has been really useful, 44th in the player rater. Want to shout out a friend of the pod, Frank Stample, for being on the Alec Burleson train all off season. But it kind of looks
really
like
good call. Really good
yeah,
call there, yeah,
and it kind of looks like what you would have if you said, "Give me the good version of Burleson this season." You probably would have said, "Yeah, about 25 homers, maybe a little bit more." Great. 285 to 290 batting average, and he's just been at the heart of this Cardinals renaissance here, and the underlying stuff looked good last year. It looks even better this year, where like the barrel rates jumped from 9.5 up to 11. Again, he's one that kind of feels like oatmeal production, in the sense that like no stat is going to completely jump off, but he's probably going to end up looking like a B+ across all stats, which is how you land at, you know, top 50 type of production. So, thoughts on Burleson, Steve? I feel like we're seeing yet another guy that's in his prime. He feels like vintage Cardinals, you know, like the type that used to just kind of come out of nowhere and be like, oh, Alan Craig is a stud? Like, who is this guy? Like, is it, you know, So it's great to have him just like right in the heart of that order with all the good pieces around him. So, yeah, thoughts on Burleson?
Yeah, this is someone that I think I have a blind spot for. It's like, you know, what do I do with a guy that, you know, hits 270, 290 in good years, but isn't going to give you much else? And maybe I sort of discounted how good he's been over the last 2 years because he did have 21 homers in 2024. He had 18 homers last year and 546 plate appearances. So a similar sort of pace there. And he's putting that all together, right? Because, you know, it's still the good contact skills and the low strikeout rate and the low whiff. But now he's pairing that with an above average barrel rate where he did not have that in years before. And that's kind of why I probably faded him. You know, he had a 6.5% barrel rate in 2024 that went up to 9.5% last year. And this year it's at 11%, 70th percentile in the league. And what do you know? It's like a true breakout. And he looks like a really good four category contributor, someone that could pace for, you know, mid 20s homers with a really good average and, you know, good counting stats along the way. So just steady improvement all across the board. I think also like he was sort of like that he was a platoon hitter for the most part, think over the last 2 years, right? And this year he's got 90 plate, you know, it's limited numbers. It's still pretty bad versus lefties. He's hitting 189 and it's just it's not good versus lefties, is all that I'm trying to say.
462
WRC plus. Right. Yeah. It's not good. So that's fine, but you know, does have first base and like last year, so he had 90 plate appearances versus lefties this year. He had 127 all of last year, and he was better versus them last year. I know, you know, you can kind of take that with a grain of salt. He was average versus lefties last year, 98 WRC plus. Sure, and he's getting more exposure. He's getting more at bats versus them, going to be exposed more. Maybe it's not that good, but I also think there's potential for upside. Or at least a little bit of positive regression versus lefties. And you would know better, like they're playing him every day, right? Lefties or righties, right? Like,
Yep. That's one of the reasons Frank was so high.
Yeah, it looks like they just bat him lower in the line. Like tonight they faced the lefty and he batted seventh. He batted fifth versus the lefty, fifth versus the lefty last week. So he's playing. So I'd honestly rather that than anything, right?
Yep. Yeah. I mean, there's a good hit tool that's just always been attached with him. So I think it won't be as brutal as it looks. And you hope that you can kind of pick and choose that, like, oh, for how much he's crushed righties this year with like the 335, 1020 OPS, that if you pair that with, you know, what he did last year, which was respectable, like you said, against lefties, then I guess that's the upside for Burleson, which you don't really attach a ton of upside to this like profile. But if he takes a step forward versus lefties, really we'd be talking about like a 310 type of batting average, not 290. I mean, there's ifs there, but overall been really solid. So definitely a surprise this year, maybe less so just because he was going at like ADP 160 and he's been productive and a great pick, but didn't necessarily like come out of nowhere, so to speak. Moving along to another last one we'll hit on, but TJ Rumfield, another first baseman that has been solid. I mean, he's gone from being like a Willie won't he waiver wire fodder type of thing. Shout out TJ, probably tagged us about five times asking if he was the real deal. But Rumfield, yeah, he came out with a bang in March and then had a really bad April and then turned it around in May and June. He's kind of settling in nicely to where now he has 12 homers, 837 OPS, 280 average. Home away splits with Coors have not been brutal. He actually has five homers on the road, 827 OPS on the road versus 847 at home. So nice to dream on him not being victim of what we say for every Rockies player, right? Of just like, yeah, well, you could do, is it a daily lineup league where you could just bench him when he's on the road? No, he's been good. Strikes out less than 15% of the time, 26 years old, giant frame, 6'5". Like, I think Rumfield feels like he's more or less here to stay, right, Steve?
I think so. You know, it's not a Savant page that's going to blow you away. The quality of contact metrics are not good. But he does pull the ball in the air, does, you know, make a lot of contact, doesn't strike out, walks a decent amount of the time, and is getting the most out of the power. And he's sort of done that in the minors, right? Like he's had, you know, mid-teens homer totals for the last few years in the minors with the Yankees, and it was a good job by them. I think he was in the forget exactly what trade. I think it was a trade deadline trade last year. The Jake Bird trade, maybe, potentially. I forget exactly what it was that sent him over to the Yankees, but a good find by the Rockies, which, you know, is a rare thing to say, but maybe with their new front office, we'll be saying that more and more these days. But, you know, the fact that you can point to the 6.2% Bauer rate, you could point to the hard hit rate that's at 32%. That's, you know, really poor, but, you know, he's also 6'5", 240. Like, I'm trying to see what his scouting grades were, as, you know, it's a 45 raw power, 40, 45 game power grade, which isn't horrible. You know, I think that's definitely better than what, you know, the exit velocity numbers would say he is.
Yeah, he's shown it, right?
He has 12 homers and 305
exactly.
plate appearances.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say, is you put the true high teen power in terms of homers in Coors with a well above average, like, pull air rate. I think it's fair to expect. And projections have him finishing at 20 homers. I think I'd take the over on that, just with how big he is and how good of a just hitter floor he has. Like, it doesn't take much to eclipse 20 plus homers in Coors. So, yeah, I think Rumfield has been nice. I'm curious with
it was a trade this off season for Angel,
for a reliever, right?
Yeah, Chivilli. I hope I'm saying that right. I don't even know if he's if Chivilli's still on the major league roster. I don't think so. Yeah, you know, he's in Triple A. Good deal for the Rockies there.
Yeah,
not that the Yankees would have anywhere to play.
Right.
You know, TJ Rumfield, but
yeah, exactly. That's get in line.
Yeah,
but yeah, Rumfield is 103rd right now on the player radar, so he's assembled a usable fantasy season and in cores that, you know, might continue, especially with the solid home away split. So. Mm-hmm. That rounds out the name. So great list there. Great rundown. Steve, do we want to do a quick hit on some of the team surprises?
Yeah.
Running long. I feel like pretty cool to see between the White Sox. We talked about the Cardinals. We talked about the Nats. I think you're right in saying, are the Mets a surprise? I think definitely their struggles have been a surprise. I know with Lindor injured, it took a while for Soto to get going. But then, yeah, the Marlins, the Pirates, like, it, when you look at the playoff picture, it's been fun, and it's going to be fun to watch down the home stretch. It feels like there's a lot more, there's less teams that are just completely on the floor, to where I feel like there's going to be some great races here. For sure, the biggest surprise in this neck of the woods is that the Cardinals are viable, you know, more likely than not playoff team, which is huge, man. It's been a long time.
There's just not to breeze past everything that you just said, but it's just been a weird year team wise. I was just looking through the standings this year. There's only three teams in the American League with a positive run differential.
Yeah. That's
heading into games on Tuesday morning. My count could have been wrong, but I think I only counted 10 teams total that had a positive run differential, which is crazy just to think about.
Yeah. I mean, this is
like the Yankees have a 110 run differential, which essentially makes up for the entire
Dodgers,
League,
Brewers, you know? Right, exactly.
The Rays have positives plus 7. The Mariners are plus 17. Everyone else in the AL has a negative run differential. The White Sox are like the closest with minus 3. In the National League, the Braves have a 96 run differential. The Nats have a 15 run differential. That's crazy considering they scored the most runs, but they also given up some of the most runs. The Dodgers have a plus 134. And then Brewers 120, Cardinals 5, Cubs 21, Pirates plus 14. The rest of the teams all have a negative run differential. Like even the Phillies, who are 43 and 36, have a negative 7 run differential. It's just been a pretty crazy year. And yeah, I think those teams have, like all of those teams, White Sox, Pirates, Cardinals, Marlins, Nats, have taken steps earlier than maybe I would have thought. I honestly thought the Reds would be one of those teams. Basically, every other team in the division has taken that step but the Reds.
Yeah.
But it's
kind of on brand for the franchise, to be honest. Yeah. It twists the knife. But both AL and NL, like 5 teams out of the wild card picture that are within 2 games. So it should be a pretty interesting stretch. But man, just to see like the White Sox as division leaders with how long we've kind of like, you know, just talked about the farm system and they got a nice farm, they can sell pieces, but it's like, no, you see in Antonacci, you know, the pitching's looked better. Like that's the one area where I'm wondering, can the Cardinals actually do something is this all just found money and you're going to accept that this isn't the year and you're just trusting the process, or will they actually try to bring in some help for the rotation? Cause I don't think even like the Palantes that seem to get it done on the, you know, on a result standpoint, they're not going to carry you into a playoff race.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Pleasant
it's
surprises.
Interesting. Like, I wonder if they'll like those teams will, like smartly sell, like, you know, thread that needle of like, try, you know, making the wild card, but also acquiring some assets. Like, did the Tigers do that 2 years ago? Like some team, like that. That's what this expanded playoff has sort of opened up to. And I don't know if that's necessarily what the league wanted. I think they wanted more all out buyers. But now instead, you've got like teams that are maybe out of it, maybe not out of it, and you know, sort of straddle that fence at the deadline
to retool.
And I think that leads to less exciting deadlines, even though in theory they should be more exciting because more teams are available. But I don't know. We'll do some trade deadline shows that comes up
in like 4 weeks or fantasy
so
implications. All right, well, we ran long, but great show. When you kind of zoom out big enough, it's fun just talking about how these guys are shaking out. So thank you guys for sticking with us. Great to be back. We will be back next week. But until then, thanks for talking baseball with us.
Thanks, guys. Later.